Okay, this is Ken Samuelson. I live in Eden, North Carolina, and my address is 545 Southwood Drive in Eden, 27288. My telephone number is 623-7787, and I'm here with Mr. Jesse Burton, who was a World War II veteran, flew on a V-24. And Jesse, why don't you give your name and where you live and phone number?
Okay. I'm Jesse M. Burton. I live at Bayberry Inn, 511 Carolyn Court, Eden, North Carolina.
You got a phone number? You do have a phone here, don't you, Jesse?
My phone is 623-3679.
Okay. And Jesse, were you born in Rockingham County?
I was born in Rockingham County, in the country about 6 miles out of Eden. Then it was Rural Route 3, Reedsville, North Carolina.
So your address was Reedsville, but you actually lived in, was it Wentworth at that time, or
well,
did you live in Reedsville?
Well, it was between Reedsville and Eden, or Leakesville at the time.
Okay, Leakesville at the time, right.
Yeah.
Okay, and when were you born, Jesse?
I was born January the 2nd, 1916.
Okay, born in 1916 in Rocking. Were you born in a hospital, Jesse, just out of curiosity, or were you born at home? Do you remember?
Don't know.
Okay. Anyway, I know a lot of people along that time frame were born at home. Okay. So you attended schools then in Rockingham County, I take it?
The first grade, I went to Mount Hermon.
Uh-huh.
That was a one-room school. My mother was a teacher. She taught 11 years in Rockingham County. But she was my first grade teacher. Then, after the first year, the schools in the county were consolidated, so I went to Wentworth Consolidated School. Then I spent the next 10 years at Wentworth.
I see.
I just went 10 years.
I see.
We just had 11 grades at the time.
Oh, okay.
And
so you graduated then in
1932.
Okay.
Yeah.
And in 1932, what did you do after you graduated?
The first year, I went to King's Business College in Greensboro. It was a business college there.
You're a very young man at that point. You're only 16 or 17, I guess, at that point. When you went off to King's?
I may have got some dates there wrong.
Well, anyway, you went off to King's?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, in Greensboro, okay.
I went to King's first year and then came home and had a tobacco crop and went back in September. And I stayed there until I graduated. I had a rough time graduating because I couldn't spell.
Oh my.
I took my first job. Oh, I'd like to go back to high school.
Okay.
I enjoyed high school. My favorite subject was baseball.
Ah, yeah.
And I love to play baseball.
Well, just what position did you play on baseball?
First base.
First base, oh boy. Okay.
I was not much of a hitter, slow, but I just love to play.
That's great. I love sports too. Okay, so I guess you then left high school then along about 19, early 30s somewhere. And then you went to King's College in Greensboro. And where did you work? Did you work some after that then?
Well, I graduated and went to work March 8th, 1936, National Biscuiting at the White House in Greensboro.
I see.
That was an interesting job, but I guess I got homesick. So then I came home and started working on working for Carolina Cotton and Woolen Mills, which was later
acquired by
Marshall Field.
Marshall Field.
And later Fieldcraft. Yeah. I started out in the Village Department.
Village Department. That's a new name on me.
The company owned all these homes.
Oh, okay.
And rented it to the people. And I worked in that office, trying to keep up with what they did on each job.
So keeping the homes up and this kind of thing, repairing the homes or whatever, maintaining them.
John Smith and Son and Hopper did most of the work on these houses.
Okay.
All the way to Fieldale. Hmm. And I worked in trying to keep up with what they did on each job.
I see.
It was long. Started work at 7 and sometimes worked till 7 at night.
Oh boy.
I was by myself most of the time. But it was good experience. I was just off the farm. I didn't know what work was except to follow a mule. Yeah.
Okay, so you worked there for a number of years then, and did you work there up until you were drafted?
Right. Worked there until October the 14th, 1942. I was drafted.
Okay, what did you know about World War II and the events leading up to World War II? Did you feel like you were well informed, or was it just kind of something happening in a faraway place?
Something happened far away. Didn't know too much about it.
Didn't know too much about it.
No.
Now, after, when Pearl Harbor, how did you learn about Pearl Harbor? Did you, on Sunday, of course, and so forth?
Well, a brother was in, had been drafted, and he was at Fort Eustace. And he had come home that weekend, and we did not turn on the radio. While he was at home, and when they carried him back to Danville to catch his ride to Fort Eustace, we heard on the radio that they had bombed Pearl Harbor.
And what did you know about Pearl Harbor? Did you have any idea?
I just didn't know anything about Pearl Harbor.
Right. You're like a lot of other people.
Yeah.
Didn't know too much about it, just a faraway place and name. Okay, well then you heard about Pearl Harbor, and you obviously were drafted, so you didn't join up. Did a lot of your friends join up at that time?
Well, I was drafted the 14th, but they gave me 2 weeks.
This is in October of 42, though, right?
42.
Yep.
October the 14th. And then on October the 28th, I had to report at Fort Bragg.
Did you give any thought to joining up, Jesse, or you just knew you'd be drafted, probably?
I didn't volunteer for nothing while I was in service. And everything
you were told to do, huh?
They got me for everything.
Okay, so you just kind of waited out then until you were drafted. And did you feel like you were well informed of what was going on after Pearl Harbor until the time you were drafted? Did you still feel like you knew what was happening in the war and so forth? You didn't feel too well informed, huh?
They began to tell us things after we were drafted.
Yeah. Okay, so you got a draft notice in the mail, I guess, right? Or did somebody call you, or how did
well,
you get a draft notice in the mail, I assume?
In the mail, because we didn't have a telephone.
Okay, no telephone, okay. So you got your draft notice in the mail. And it told you to report, then what, six days later or whatever?
No, to the 28th of October.
Okay.
Just 2 weeks from.
2 weeks, okay.
Yeah.
So you had to get ready to go.
Yeah.
And now how about where you worked? Was that a problem where you worked? Did they kind of expect that people would be drafted and so forth?
Yeah, I expected.
And where were you asked to report to duty?
I reported duty at Fort to Reedsville, at the draft office in Reedsville.
Right.
And there's a bus that carried a whole load, bus load of us to Fort Bragg.
Uh-huh. I see. You. Yeah. So you went to Fort Bragg.
Yeah.
Okay. And when you went to, Fort Bragg, you went on a bus with a lot of other folks going down there. What was it like when you got off the bus? What's the first thing that faced you? Do you remember particularly? Was there a drill instructor there?
Or somebody was the mayor of Eden.
What's that?
Mayor of Leakesville.
You what?
The mayor of Leakesville.
Oh, the mayor of Leakesville was there?
Yeah, they had drafted him, and he was just kind of wandering around down there and knew we was coming in.
Oh, the mayor was drafted. Yeah. What was his name at that time? Do you remember his name?
Floyd Osborne.
Oh, Floyd Osborne. Yeah, sure. He was the mayor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was drafted.
And he was drafted.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know his two sons. Two of his sons, anyway. Okay, so Floyd Osborne was down there.
Yeah.
So Floyd met the bus, kind of, huh?
Yeah, right.
And he got off. And, okay, after you met Floyd, then what happened to you?
Well,
what did you do?
Housed us, and we took a lot of examinations and took a lot of shots.
Uh-huh.
They gave us shots. And one time you'd look over to your left when they were putting the needle in, and when they did that, they put one in your right.
So you're getting both sides.
And later they forgot, they lost all the records, and so they started over.
Oh, so you got double shots, huh?
And it was triple time one time.
Oh, that was too bad they lost those records, wasn't it? So you got double and triple dose.
I guess.
Okay, so then they gave you a uniform, I guess, and what did you have? What did you have, dungarees, or did they give you a full dress?
Both.
Full dress uniform and everything?
Yeah.
So did you do your basic then at Fort Bragg?
No.
You didn't do the basic?
About a week. Then they put us on a troop train.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, it was a troop train, a long troop train. And they sent us to California. Now to go to California, they sent us way down, sent us south, and then they'd turn around and go north. And part of the time they were going straight. And oh, it took a long time. And we finally landed at Fresno, California for our basic training.
I see.
Well, where we were to get our basic training had been a camp for the Japanese.
Oh. An internment camp?
Yeah.
An internment camp for the Japanese, okay.
Yeah, and they moved the Japanese out because it was too close to the ocean now.
Okay.
Okay, and they moved us in. We had no sanitary provisions, hardly at all. The food was fair. You could eat enough at breakfast so that you could last all day.
Tied you over, huh?
You took more tests, and then they got you in about a couple of weeks. They sent you somewhere else. They decided from your test where they was going to send you.
Did you take much basic training there?
Very little.
It was mostly just processing, huh?
They didn't have any guns or anything like that. Nothing there.
So where did they send you then, Jesse?
Well, from my test, they sent me to armor school, Buckleyfield, Denver, Colorado.
Okay.
And I was on the second shift there.
But you still didn't have any basic training, marching and military weapons and what have you? You still hadn't done any of that, huh?
We learned about weapons, the 40 and the 30 caliber at Buckley Field.
Okay. But no infantry type weapons of any kind.
No infantry.
In other words, they saw you were headed toward the Air Force, the Air Corps, and they just shipped you off, huh?
But Buckley was Air Force, strictly Air Force. And
why do you figure they didn't have any basic training like they did? You know, you hear mostly about basic training for people who just go in the service.
We just didn't have any.
Just didn't have any. That's interesting.
And
they must have been in such a rush for people that didn't have time to do it.
They were rushing for people. Oh, man, they were rushing for people.
Because the war was not going too well at that time.
No. And so I went to school from then until about March. I forgot the dates.
Yeah.
And
so March of 44 had been about, or excuse me, 43, I would say.
43.
43, yeah, March 43.
I enjoyed Buckley Field. It was cold out, but it wasn't bad.
Mm-hmm. So what did you do at the field? What was your typical day like? Do you remember? It was basically all training, right?
Yeah, we were learning the guns.
Uh-huh. How to load.
How to load.
Unload or whatever.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Clean them and what have you, repair.
Yeah, we had to be able to do it in the dark.
Uh-huh.
And
you had to be able to tear a machine gun. These are the 50 caliber machine guns, basically?
Yeah, that was in the machine.
Uh-huh.
In the
aircraft.
B-24.
Right.
So we had to learn that.
And you had to do it so well that you could do it in the dark.
Yeah, we had to learn everything about it.
Uh-huh.
It was a good course. And so then I graduated from that.
When you were still taking your basic training at is it Buckley Field, you said?
Buckley Field.
At Buckley Field, did you fly in any aircraft at that time?
No, they didn't even have an aircraft.
Did you do any firing in the machine guns?
No.
You just learned how to repair, take them apart, clean them, this kind of thing?
Right.
That's all you did?
Right.
Okay.
And then after I finished, they sent me down to, sent us all down to, and had a physical. And when I went through the physical, I was 6'1". Well, the doctor or whoever, the sergeant or whoever was there, asked me if I had any objections to flying. I told him no. And then I lost that 1 inch there because it couldn't be over 6 feet.
Oh, you lost the 1 inch, huh?
Yeah, so I was 6 feet.
Oh, okay. So he just took one inch off of your height. So they needed a gunner. That's what they needed.
So then we went to Tyndall Field, Florida, all the way from Colorado, all the way to Florida.
Uh-huh.
And that's where we got gunnery. We did a lot of flying on AT-6s.
Okay, this would have been like in, March or April of 43?
Yeah,
about somewhere along about there.
About April, I guess.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. That was...
Okay. And so then you started to fly?
Well, we started flying on trainers.
Okay.
They didn't have any B-24s down there. They had a B-34.
Okay.
Only time I've ever seen a B-34. And I had 86s.
Okay.
And you went out and practiced, and you shot at a, they pulled a banner behind.
Big sleeve?
And you shot at that. And the different ones on the ship had different colors.
Uh-huh.
I really don't think I did so good. But they were not turning down anybody.
They needed gunners as well as a lot of other people.
And so there's a whole lot of my friends from up at
How long were you down there, Jesse and Tyndall?
Oh, about 2 or 3 months.
And what was your day like down there? Did you get up early in the morning and start training?
Early in the morning, late at night.
You worked, what, 12 hours a day or more, would you say? Or?
Yeah, we, in school.
Uh-huh. You were in school, you had a lot of classroom work? Or was it mostly flying?
No, it was inside and flying, too.
Okay.
It was rather enjoyable in a way.
Uh-huh. Did you have any free time down there?
Not much. See, I hadn't had any free time since I went in.
Since you got drafted, there was very little free time. Did you ever get into the city or anything? Or?
No. I think they carried us in one time to a movie.
Uh-huh.
And, they showed us movie, about...
A lot of training films, I'm sure.
Different things. It's, going out with some of the prostitutes, you catch,
Oh, yeah, sure, yeah, had health films.
They emphasized that quite a bit.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And so...
Okay, so you were there then until sometime in 43, maybe what would be March, April, June, somewhere along about there.
Okay, then I went from there, started back to California. Went all the way to California. I remember I ate supper at Bakersfield, California. And then at Bakersfield, I turned back and went to Arizona, Tucson, Arizona. And I got to fly on B-24s then. And they began to assemble our crew together.
Okay.
So I...
That was at Tucson, you say? At Tucson?
Tucson, okay. Yeah. It was mainly assembling our crew.
Uh-huh.
I didn't fly much with my crew. In fact, I don't think I did. But I just flew with... Just get used to flying.
Uh-huh. And this was in Tucson?
Tucson.
How long were you in Tucson, Jesse? Do you recall?
Well, not over a month.
Okay.
I don't remember.
So when you were in Tucson, had you already had all of your in-flight training, I take it? Learning how to fire the gun? Had you already done all that?
That was the next base.
Oh, in Tucson, you mean?
No, we left Tucson, went to El Paso.
Oh, okay. El Paso.
And our crew was together then.
Okay.
And we did a lot of flying.
Okay.
Together. We had to...
Now, when you say you did a lot of flying together, did you have several planes flying together in formation?
Sometimes several planes, sometimes about six.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes there would be flights where the navigator, had to take us certain places.
Uh-huh.
And then sometimes it would be the bombardier, see if he could drop bombs anywhere near the target. And sometimes it was the gunners,
So you were
all went along.
You were actually training for your missions at that point.
At that
point, is that right?
We did.
You're training totally for your missions.
Yeah.
And all the pieces had to fit together then, I guess, at that point.
We flew up to Amargarda, New Mexico, a lot. That's where we dropped bombs.
Uh-huh.
They were dummy bombs, of course.
Right. And you had to hit a target out in the desert or whatever?
Yeah.
And did somebody rate you on how you did and score you and what have
right.
you?
Right. But there again, they turned nobody down.
Uh-huh.
We had the ones of us that was in the waist, like the waist gunners, we had to observe the what was on the ground.
Uh-huh.
Well, they we were taught to look for things that might be good for intelligence to know.
Oh, it's like troop movements or whatever it might be, huh?
Yeah. I know one time I think I saw 70-some cars, 70-some box cars, going from Alamogordo to El Paso. And I think I got the most or the best. Anyway, I got a cigarette, carton of cigarettes for that.
Well, the fact that you had identified these and reported back that you saw these, because that was important information.
Yeah.
I see. So in your time then this is in Colorado, was it?
No, this is El Paso.
Oh, excuse me, El Paso. In El Paso then, did you have any free time in El Paso? Were you kind of going around the clock there too?
We had a little free time. But before we left El Paso, we were given about a 7-day pass, and we were given a priority that we could fly home.
Okay.
Okay, we all of us flew home and spent as much time as we could.
Now, did you fly home commercial air, or did you fly on a military plane?
Commercial
air.
Mine was American Airlines.
Okay.
And when I got back to Dallas, Texas, Fort Worth, Dallas, somebody with a high priority pulled me off. So I was AWOL.
Oh, my.
And American Airlines put me up in the biggest hotel there. I was there two days, and the pilot came by and saw me, and just about the whole crew did. They didn't do anything to me. Didn't even have to go before the commanding officer.
Yeah, it wasn't your fault.
It wasn't my fault.
No. But you're still AWOL anyway.
Yeah.
So they didn't put that in your record, though, I guess, huh?
No.
It's just a event that happened, huh?
It was funny. All of the crew came by, waved at me.
So by this time, then, you had formed your crew then, and you were already. What did you know about what was going to happen to you at that point? Anything? What did they tell you?
Not too much.
What did you expect?
Really, we weren't expecting too much. We were just led, you might say.
Okay, you were just waiting for the next order, huh?
Yeah.
Well. Okay. Well, and then what happened?
After we got back to El Paso, the whole group, there was a group of us, went to Grand Island, Nebraska. I never did understand what we went to Grand Island, Nebraska for, but anyway, we went to Grand Island, Nebraska. There was about 40 crews. And from there, we went to Kilmore, New Jersey. But Grand Island, we just was there about a week. Didn't do anything, or the gunners didn't do anything. The pilot may have had something to do. I don't know. And then we, on a troop train, from Grand Island, we left and we went by a troop train to Camp Kilmer.
Camp Kilmer, okay.
That was in New Jersey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
big
that's
camp.
Where we left the States.
Now, how about your plane?
Well,
did you have a plane at that time?
No.
Now, did you go overseas?
We went on the Queen Mary.
On the Queen Mary? How about it? I've been on the Queen Mary. Not when you were, though. What was your life like aboard the Queen Mary? For a week or whatever
it
was.
When we left Grand Island, for some reason they pulled two crews and was going to rush us to England. And ours happened to be one of them, our crew. And they rushed us to England. And we went on to Queen Mary. But then we went to Kilmer, and we loaded on the Queen Mary at 42nd Street there. Mm-hmm. There was about 22,000 soldiers on that.
Is that right?
And they were sleeping on deck. But we had, I guess you'd say, good accommodations. We were way down in the hole, and we did have somewhere to sleep.
You had a bunk of some kind?
So we were lucky.
Or was it a hammock?
A hammock,
okay.
Yeah. But the poor guys up on the deck, and I understand they had one night was terrible rough.
Uh-huh.
A lot of those soldiers hung over the rails there.
Yeah, vomiting, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Now, how about your accommodations? They were fairly good, I guess, compared to some of the others, huh?
The food was terrible.
Do you remember what they fed you? Do you have any recollection of that?
Any what?
Recollection of what kind of food, what they fed you? Do you have any recollection of that?
Well,
a long time ago.
I ate mostly National Biscuit cookies.
Mostly
I could
cookies.
Get to the PX and get them. Most of it was liver.
Oh, liver.
Can you imagine 2 meals a day, liver for about a week, about 8 days?
So if you didn't like liver, you were...
I didn't like liver.
That's amazing. They had liver every meal just about.
It was terrible.
Oh, gosh.
And then we reached Greenock, up close to Liverpool.
Uh-huh.
And that's where we debogged.
Okay.
And
now your whole crew was with you at this time, right?
Right.
Including your pilot and what have you. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, all 10 of us.
So you debarked there at, is it Greenock or Greenwich? What is it?
No, it was Greenock.
Greenock, okay.
Greenwich is somewhere else.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Greenwich is somewhere else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But, and then we landed there and we left there at night and went to a place called Stone. And I don't know of anything we did there except we marched a little, walked a little, I mean. And the first night there, I don't know whether you read where the Jerry's bombed Coventry real
yes,
rough.
Yes, right. Uh-huh.
They bombed Coventry the first night we were there.
Is that right?
And we stood out and watched them.
Now, how close were you to Coventry then? Not very far away, apparently.
Not very far away.
Is that right? So you watched the Coventry bombing?
We were crazy enough. We didn't know. We didn't have any sense.
Did any of the bombers come your direction, so to speak,
near where you were? No.
But you were able to observe the bombing of Coventry.
Yeah.
Very historic day in the war, yeah.
So,
let me get back to your trip
Queen Mary.
Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry, not the Queen Mary. But after you arrived at Greenock, let me ask you this. What were your accommodations in Greenock? Did you have a barracks
we
there?
We weren't there long enough. I think they had, if I recall, they had GI trucks there, and we just
slept
in trucks.
Slept in trucks, basically?
In trucks, and just went on down to Stone from there.
Okay. Okay, and then in Stone, was that a military base there, or was that something else?
I don't know what it was. It looked like it had been a college, small college.
Small college, okay.
Uh-huh. And we had rooms there, 2 or 3 of us in a room.
But it wasn't a barracks, though.
No.
It was a college.
Yeah.
Dormitory.
And we were in that, We walked around part of the countryside, not much, but, and but there was a beautiful country there.
So how long were you in Stone then?
Was that just less than a week.
Okay.
And we didn't do, the gunners didn't do, have anything to do.
Did you have any free time there? Did you go into the town and meet anybody?
We had free time, but we couldn't leave.
Couldn't leave the base?
Yeah. And so from there, we went down to Cheltenham, that kind of southeast of London. And it was a military base. And we didn't write much flying there, practice flying.
You just flew around in over England somewhere, huh?
Yeah.
That's the idea.
Yeah, they, and we flew sometimes the whole crew would fly, and sometimes just the navigator and the pilot and co-pilot and the engineer.
So this was an actual military base then?
I don't know.
Or was it just an airfield?
It was an airfield, just an airfield, yeah.
But it wasn't really a military base particularly, or did you have barracks? Did you have any barracks or anything, or just?
Yeah, they had these Quonset huts.
Quonset huts, okay, so it was kind of a temporary type building, so.
I know it was a cold time. And we ate pretty good there. Mainly because our tail gunner had a way of getting food.
Very good. There's always somebody like that in your group, right? So your tail gunner got you some good food. Now, did you prepare your own, or were you fed by on a base, in a base cafeteria-like, or, you know, dining hall, or what was it like? Or did you eat separately somewhere?
Without what?
Did your crew eat separately somewhere, or were you part of a large group eating?
We ate in a consolidated mess.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. And we didn't get too cold. There again, a tail gunner knew how to get that coat from somewhere.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Now, but you, would you not have gotten your heavy clothing without your tail gunner?
We had heavy clothing, yeah.
But your tail gunner got some extra things for you, I guess.
Got coke.
Oh, coke. Coke, yeah. I see, okay.
Burning those little stoves.
Oh, okay. Stove. Yeah, I misunderstood you. Yeah. So you got your coke, okay, to burn in the stove. Because you had no base, I guess you had central heat in
just
a little
stove about so high.
That's why, that's when you got a little stove really as your heat.
Yeah.
It wasn't a central heating system, just a stove.
Just in the middle of the hood.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
And so you kind of gathered around that to keep warm, is that
keep
the idea?
Warm, yeah.
Now, were you able to, did you, at this time, what kind of information was flowing to you? Do you remember?
Not too much.
Still not getting too much information?
Not too much,
Still just following orders, basically whatever they told you to do. Did you have access, do you remember, just to any newspapers or even Stars and Stripes or anything of that kind?
But we left Cheltenham and went up near, up northern England, up near Norwich, a little place, Shipton, and that's where I was stationed.
That's where your base was?
Yeah, 44th Bomb Group.
Now, was that a full-fledged military base, or again, was that just with temporary
buildings? Yeah, that was a military base.
That was a military base, okay.
Built by Americans.
Okay, and what was the name of that again?
Shipton.
Shipham. Okay. Oh, okay, Shipham, okay.
Yeah.
And that was your base.
That's where we did our flying from.
Okay. Now, did you... Is that where you got your aircraft, your B-24, or did you have it somewhere before then?
We got our plane there. We got an old one.
You got an old B-24?
Yeah. And it was old, and it was war weary.
Worn out.
Yeah. And
shot up pretty badly?
Every time we went out on a mission, something would happen. And we'd have to come back, and they were beginning to get kind of peeved with us.
Yeah.
And so they got a new plane in there and they gave it to us, and we did fine over that.
How many missions did you fly on the old plane? Very many of your missions?
I believe it was about five.
Five missions, and they weren't successful? You had to come back every time, basically?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They finally used that plane to assemble planes before a mission. Uh-huh. They wanted to assemble.
That was kind of the key plane where everybody assembled around that plane,
right.
Is that the idea?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Okay, now, ship them then. So you got to ship them. When would that have been, Jesse? Let me turn this. Okay, so you would have been in ship them then about March sometime, according to.
Well, we got that before that.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah. We got that about the first.
March
we were there.
44.
We were there soon after the first year.
Uh-huh.
Some of the crew members. When you first get there, they put some of the crew with crews that needed some men,
uh-huh,
to get experience. And the waist gunners and the radio operator, the waist gunner and radio operator flew with others. And they went on missions in January.
Okay.
So.
Were you on any of those missions?
No. I had trouble. I was in the hospital. I had trouble with my back.
Oh.
Yeah. And they sent me to the hospital and found out it was an impacted wisdom tooth. So they pulled it and then lost my record. So I was in the hospital all that time. And then my first mission was March the 21st.
Okay.
But,
okay, so you were in the hospital for a time because of a wisdom tooth that affected your back.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
But some old major pulled it.
Okay. So at Shipham then, you got there, I guess, sometime in March of 44 then. How were your accommodations at Shipham? Did you have good facilities for the
crewmen? We got good food there. The airmen did.
Uh-huh. And were the facilities otherwise good? Did you have good sleeping facilities?
They were very good. Uh-huh. Pretty good.
And how close were you to any town, or were you out in the country somewhere?
Oh, we were, I don't know, just, I guess, about maybe 10 miles from Durham.
Uh-huh. There. From Durham? Okay.
Yeah. A little, but it's uh-huh. Dehram, I believe, or something
okay.
like that. But anyway, I never did go into town much. When the crew would go into town, I stayed in the barracks because it was quiet then.
After all the crew went to town, it was quiet in the barracks. Okay. Turn tape now.
This is an editor's note. End of tape A, side one. The interview continues on tape A, side two.
Okay, so you're at Shipham. Now, Shipham, what was your routine like in Shipham? You were a crew member aboard B-24, a waist gunner, and an armorer. Did you have any armorer duties?
No.
Or were you strictly waist gunner?
When we were called to put on a mission, everything was ready for us.
Okay.
The guns was there, the ammunition's put in the guns, and
right.
everything.
So you were ready to go?
Ready to go, yeah.
Now, tell me about what were your feelings, and I'm going to talk a lot about your missions here and some of your comments and feelings. But, okay, so you're there on this base. What's your overall feeling of where you were and what you were doing? What was your impression of all that? How did you feel about what you were doing then? Do you have any strong recollection of that?
Well, back then, we all thought it was a thing we had to do. And I guess we'd had to.
Yeah.
Because Hitler would have taken over the world, no doubt about that.
Did you give any thought to your own personal safety in this kind of thing? You say, oh boy, I'm in a real precarious situation here, about to fly over Germany and this kind of thing.
I don't think so many of them thought about, say dying.
Yeah.
They didn't think about dying. I didn't think too much about it until I got up after D-Day.
Uh-huh.
And then all of a sudden I woke up and said, I've got a chance to finish these missions. And then that's when I began to get scared.
Oh, okay. Up until then you thought you were a dead man anyway, huh?
Yeah. So,
and then you thought, hey, I've got a chance to finish it.
And every time a plane would get too close to us, I'd try to get him out of our window.
Get him out of your window, right?
Yeah. That's when I got scared.
That's an interesting
idea. The last three were the ones I got scared. And they were easy ones.
Uh-huh.
They were easy ones.
But they were the ones that you were the most afraid, huh?
Yeah. They were sending over so many pilots that a lot of them didn't know how to fly a formation.
Uh-huh.
You had to fly a tight formation if you survived. Germany had a bunch of flyers. They had to have so many kills to get in there. And when
a special squadron?
Yeah, that was Hitler's, pride and joy.
Uh-huh.
Well, when they came through, somebody went down.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't have a tight formation so that they couldn't get through, you had a chance. But if you left a big space there and one of them got through there, somebody went down. Mm-hmm. On March 8th, 1944, they went through our squadron, went through everything, and a lot of planes went down. Some of them were on their last mission.
That was April the 8th, right, on Easter?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Jesse, let's go back to, I want to talk more about your missions, but let's go back to your life at your base there. Tell me about, what time did you normally get up in the morning? And let's say, if you had a mission, I guess things were a little more, if you did not have a mission, things were a little more relaxed. You didn't have quite the time schedule, I guess, that you would when you had a mission. So what was it like when you didn't have a mission? What was your day like? And then let's talk about the day of a mission.
Well,
what was it like when you didn't have a mission?
Well, most of the time on a mission, we never knew what time the mission would be. An orderly would come around and wake you. He has been around at 10 o'clock at night for the next day.
Uh-huh.
He has been around at 10 o'clock the next day for a mission that day.
Uh-huh.
They had a purpose in that. I don't know what it was except to throw off the enemy from knowing when to expect it.
So basically you didn't know whether you were going to have a mission or not then?
No.
So you were just totally, might say, surprised every time they came by.
Yeah, we were.
You knew one was coming, but you didn't know when.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's say they came by at 10 o'clock in the evening. Would they come by at 10 o'clock in the evening for a mission the next day then? Is that the idea?
Yeah, we had one. That was D-Day.
Okay.
Yeah, at 10 o'clock.
Yeah. Oh, I see, because you had an early, very early morning mission, I suppose.
And then,
but on a normal mission day, what time would they probably come by and wake you up?
Most of the time it was about about 5 or something.
5 in the morning?
5 or 6 longer.
And what would he come by and say to you? What would this orderly say to you?
He'd just wake us up.
He'd just wake you up?
Yeah.
Did he tell you that mission day or anything?
No.
Or did you know? You knew.
We knew. We had so long to go down and eat breakfast. They'd have breakfast for us.
What kind of breakfast would you normally have on a mission day?
On a mission day, pancakes.
Did they feed you better light. Than usual on a mission day?
A lot of times it would be something light.
Something light?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And it wasn't bad.
Okay, so you had good food on a mission day?
Yeah.
But it was usually pancakes? Did they give you eggs and bacon? And
if they could find eggs, they'd have eggs.
You'd have fresh eggs?
Fresh eggs, yeah.
But you said it still wasn't a very heavy breakfast, so still wouldn't feed. What was the purpose in that? Why didn't they want you to have a good heavy breakfast?
I don't know. Something
had to do with it getting up to altitude?
Something due to your body.
Yeah. Okay. So you had a relatively light breakfast then, but
right.
It was a good breakfast.
Yeah.
Okay. And then what did you do after you had breakfast then?
Well, we'd go back to the barracks and get dressed for a mission.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of clothing would you wear on your mission?
Well, most of the time it was just a flight.
Flight suit?
Flight suit.
Uh-huh.
Electric flight suits.
Electric flight suit that plug in and keep you warm?
Right.
Was it a very heavy flight suit?
No, not too bad, no.
The electricity current is what kept you warm, huh?
A lot of the times it didn't work, but sometimes they did. Well, most of the time they did work, but every once in a while there would be one that didn't work. And sometimes they'd get shot out so that it couldn't work.
Right.
Yeah.
So you had your flight suit on. What else did you take with you? Did you have a gun? Did you have a knife?
No.
Anything at all?
We had a 45 gun.
You had a 45 pistol that you carried?
Yeah.
Every crew member had a 45 pistol? Every crew member had a 45 pistol?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And we had a big bag that we carried. We usually carried an extra pair of shoes.
Uh-huh.
And some, and my table gun always carried cigarettes.
Uh-huh.
He wanted us to go down in Sweden so he'd carry cigarettes.
Wanted to go down to Sweden. If you had a choice, go down to Sweden, huh?
Yeah. Every one of us had we decided how we was going to get out of that.
Uh-huh.
Well, one of my crew members from up in Virginia, we were going to walk to Spain.
If you went down, you decided you walked to Spain, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Follow the underground.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so you had heavy flying boots, I take it, right?
Yeah.
Real heavy? Were they electrically heated too?
No.
No. Okay, so did you have real heavy socks then?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And how about gloves? Did you have gloves and glove liners?
With electric heat.
Electric heat in the gloves too,
yeah.
Huh? And how about your, what did you wear on your head?
We had a helmet.
Helmet that came down over your ears. Was that electrically heated too?
Yeah. And then we had earphones.
Okay.
Or we had
at your throat.
At your throat. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And okay. And did you have now you could hear the pilot talk. Did you have a little loudspeaker or whatever in your ear? Some kind of amplifier in your ear, or was it, you could talk to him, but you could hear him too, couldn't you though?
Yeah, I could hear him. I don't remember the thing in my ear.
Okay. Uh-huh. Anyway, you were able to hear him.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the way you were. Now your survival equipment, did you have survival equipment then? You talked about the gun. And did you have any medicine?
A box about so big.
Did you have food in there? K rations or whatever?
Yeah.
Anything else that you had for survival in case you went down? You had a parachute, of course, didn't you?
I don't remember anything else.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you would have had a parachute somewhere. Because you could have bailed out if, your ship gets hit.
Yeah.
Bail out. Okay, so you were dressed. Now, was this pretty heavy when you got all this stuff on?
Not too bad.
Not too bad? Did you have anything else in the way of fur-lined jackets or anything that you wore?
I don't remember. I don't think we did.
Basically, you had your electrically heated outfit on, huh?
Okay. I think the first ones over there, before they had the electric heated suit, must have had Fur-Line.
They had the heavier Fur-Line stuff, yeah. Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah.
Before they had the electric heated stuff. Okay, so you got up, you had breakfast, you got your all your uniform on, and this is getting along about what time, 6 o'clock or so, or 6:30, something like that?
More like 6:30.
And then how did you get out to your plane?
Well, they'd come around.
Well, excuse me, I'm sorry, I jumped ahead. You had a briefing first, didn't you?
Well, a truck would pick us up at our barracks and carry us to the briefing station.
Okay, you went to your briefing station,
all
right.
And then everybody on the crew would be there then.
Including the pilot?
Pilot, yeah.
Okay. They didn't have separate briefing for the crew and separate?
I don't remember separate.
Okay. And so did they have somebody come up in front of a big blackboard or whatever? And a
red big
screen?
Well, in what?
A big screen of some kind or blackboard or something up there.
They have a big map.
Big map, okay.
Uh-huh. And they'd tell exactly where we're going.
Okay.
And the navigator was supposed to get all of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what else? Did they tell you about what you could expect?
Yeah. They could tell how many guns to expect on the way out there, how many over the target, and how many back.
Uh-huh.
So they covered it pretty good.
How did you feel when you heard all that information, Jesse? What do you think? Oh, gosh, here comes another one. Do you recollect any particular feeling on when you get all that information about this mission?
No. I don't.
Just something you had to do, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, so the mission, so they had the briefing, and then what did you do? Go out and pile in your truck again and...
Yeah.
Take you out to your
plane? To the where the plane was.
And what did you do when you got to the plane? Did you have to check anything out?
No, we didn't do too much of that.
It was all done for you?
All done for us. We'd wait for the time, and then a chaplain would come by.
Uh-huh. Chaplain would come by, okay.
And we had a little Catholic chaplain we all loved, and he would usually come by.
Uh-huh.
And if he didn't, we want to know why he didn't.
Oh.
Yeah, but he was a good fella. And then we'd get in the plane, get in line to taxi out.
Okay, now when you got in the plane then, what did you have any particular duties when you got on the plane immediately, or did you just kind of wait?
Just kind of wait.
Okay, so then you were just waiting for the engines to start.
Yeah.
And then for the plane to start moving, huh?
Yeah.
So you just kind of waited there in your, now did you have a place to sit, a particular place to sit? Or did you stand there by your
gun? I had to stand.
Gun? And so it was basically just waiting until you time to go.
You're right.
Okay. Okay, so the plane starts up, they start the engines, and they start, I guess there are, how many might be on a typical rate? How many planes might you have?
Well,
you
about 24, 25.
Uh-huh.
And of course, D-Day. Everything was up.
Uh-huh. Now, typically, other than D-Day, did you join when your 24 or 25 planes took off? Did you join up with a lot of other aircraft from other air bases?
Yeah.
And so you had a big.
Each one had a place to be.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And sometimes they didn't have the same target.
Oh, okay. They would split off and one go one way and one another way.
Like if you're going to Berlin, everything in Berlin was a target. So one group would go this way and another on the railroads and another on here. But then they'd get together going back.
I see. Okay. So your plane then is ready to take off. Now you're lined up on the runway and just waiting to your turn.
Yeah.
What's the impression that you have once those engines start revving up? What did you have any thoughts that went through your mind particularly, or hey, just another mission?
No, I just...
Just know, another one, huh?
Yes.
Okay, so the plane revs up, you go down the runway, you take off, and then what do? You form up with your other planes, I guess?
Yeah, after we get up maybe 15,000 or 20,000 feet.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Then you form up and form your larger formation.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. head toward wherever you're going.
We get ready to go across the English Channel.
Now, were most of your missions over Germany? Or were all of them over Germany, or some in France?
Oh, there was a whole bunch of them in France,
uh-huh.
especially along the coast.
Oh, that's right. Before D-Day, there would have been a lot in France, mm-hmm. too, yeah.
And,
yeah. Okay, so then you went on your mission, you took off in your big formation, and on a typical formation, how long was it before you encountered any problem from the 88s or the... German aircraft or whatever?
Well, or was sometimes that they'd hit you just as soon as you cross the channel.
Sometimes right as soon as you cross the channel.
It depends on what part of the way you went across the channel.
Uh-huh, right.
And sometimes you go across and not a single gun.
Not a single gun.
Uh-huh.
But...
They were playing a game too.
Yeah, they were keeping you, off balance.
Right.
So, say on a mission to Germany, then you could either get faced with guns and aircraft immediately, or you could wait quite a while, and it would be quite a while before you would.
Sometimes they wait until you're over the target.
Uh-huh.
Because they know when they get going under target, they're going right straight on in now.
Right.
And they know that that's a good time to hit.
So what is your, as you're flying over then, typically sometimes you could wait a long time before you would be faced with any enemy action. When you get close to your target, what did your pilot have anything to say to the crew? When you get near the target or anything, do anything
not
in particular?
No.
How about when you go on the bombing run? What is there anything?
Everything. The navigator has control then.
The bombardier.
The navigator.
Navigator. Okay.
Oh, and the bombardier, he has it. He bombs off the ships in front of him when he sees the bombs drop back. He pulls the toggle.
Oh, okay. Now, were you ever the lead ship?
Yeah, sometimes.
And in that case, your bombardier would, in effect, fly the plane then, would he not?
But they always had somebody like a colonel or general on the lead.
Okay.
No, I don't remember whether we ever had one or not.
That was a lead ship?
Yeah.
So anyway, you're flying toward your target then, and then, as you say, your bombardier keys off the plane in front of him, I guess, and when he drops, then you drop. Is that the idea?
And then somebody at the back will drop off for hours.
Right, uh-huh.
And,
so that lead plane has to really know what they're doing.
Yeah, he's
the key.
Yeah, he's the 8th Air Force lead.
Right, uh-huh.
Or one of them.
Right. Now, as you went into that bombing run, then this is the time when I guess you were very vulnerable. Or did the plane were the planes attacking at that time, or did they?
Yeah.
Or were they kind of waiting till all the flak got out of the way?
They come in now.
Even with the flak flying, huh?
Yeah, they and of course they kind of coordinate. A lot of times they coordinate the flak on the ground with the
with the planes. Because the German planes didn't want to get caught in their own flak, right?
But they knew that it was a good time to come in when they, when you on a bum run.
Because you can't deviate from your course.
You got to hold that right straight in there.
Jess, what was it like with the flak flying up there? What did you see? And what was the sensation that you felt when
the flaks?
Yeah, when the flak was flying.
Really, I didn't see much. I was watching the sky.
You were watching for enemy aircraft?
Yeah.
Did you have any sensation or any bumping around or, you know, this kind of thing of your plane? Did you ever get a close call on any flak hits, or did you get flak hits?
I had some close calls. I think all of us did.
Uh-huh.
Flak came up while I was standing.
Is that right?
I happened to be over on the other side looking. My buddy on the other side called me over there to look at something. And I went over there and the flak came right up where I was standing.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, my word.
I don't know about how bad it would have hurt me, because it was pretty well spent.
Then on the bomb run, of course, bombs away, the bombs are gone. What was the sensation? Did you have any particular sensation when the bombs dropped? Did the plane act differently?
It kind of
jumped up.
Yeah, because
releasing all that weight.
All that weight, several thousand.
Right. 6,000 pounds or more, yeah. Whatever. Okay, so your plane kind of jumps up. You know the bombs are gone. What happens then? Does the pilot say anything?
The pilot tries to turn around, turn back.
He has
instructions how far out to go before he turns.
Uh-huh.
And he turns back and he tries to get home.
As fast as possible.
Yeah.
And I guess as fast as possible. You gotta be concerned about on a long flight, you still have to conserve gasoline, I guess,
right.
And do all those things.
You hope there's some P-51s and P-47s and P-38s out there waiting to carry you in.
Right, waiting to help you back home. Huh? Typically, did you have a lot of cover in fighter aircraft?
The latter part of our missions, we had a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when the P-51 started coming over. Man, they could go a long ways.
Yeah.
And that helped.
Yeah, the drop tanks and so forth.
Yeah. Now the P-47s, they were beautiful, but they couldn't go as far. They could just carry you a part away and then another plane would have to pick you up.
Mm-hmm.
Usually the 51s.
I see. So on your trip home, of course, you still had to be alert to enemy aircraft and so forth, and you still had flak flying.
Mm-hmm.
Did the pilot attempt to go straight home, or did he still have to take evasive action, or how did that work?
Well, They had way he was to go.
So he had a route that he had to follow. Kind of a zigzag.
Yeah,
usually.
Trying to miss the flak.
Okay.
And so he had to follow that.
Because you knew where the guns were, so you had to fly a route that would miss those guns, huh?
Right.
Where the gun emplacements were.
Yeah.
Okay. I see. Okay, so you're heading back toward England then, and this is usually about, four or five, six hours?
Depending on where it is. Sometimes it's just
Berlin, for example, it'd be a long way home.
Yeah, and sometimes it's 5 hours.
Yeah.
We had one that was 10 hours long.
10 hours one direction?
No.
Total of 10 hours.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, total of 10 hours, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That would be deep into Germany, I guess.
Yeah.
Huh?
That happened to be down France.
Oh, it was in France?
Bordeaux, close to Bordeaux.
I see, okay. So you're heading home then, and hopefully, you don't have too much enemy action. What happens when you see that channel? What do you think then?
What do I think? You see what?
When you see the channel,
Oh.
English Channel. Was that kind of your landmark? Oh, man, we're just about home.
Of course, a lot of us asleep.
Oh, you're asleep. Okay, you're sleeping. Okay.
I don't know how we slept.
I don't know how you did either.
You know, breathing that pure oxygen, it just makes you sleep. No, it's hard to keep awake.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, so once you feel like you're out of any enemy action, then you would try. Now, where did you sleep, Jesse? You just lay on the
lay down of the, on those old spent cartridges sticking up in your back.
So you had the spent cartridges as your mattress, huh?
Yeah.
It wasn't a very comfortable mattress.
Oh, me.
And so let me ask you about the spent cartridges. Now, your gun, you were a gunner, and your gun is basically outside the window, is it
right,
not, for the most part. The spent cartridge, do most of the spent cartridges go outside, or do most of them come inside?
Come inside.
Most of them come inside?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I was thinking that most of them would go outside.
And
but
then the fellas from ordnance have to pick them up and save them.
Yeah. Oh, and then they reload them?
I guess they did.
Yeah, I guess they probably did, yeah. So most of the spent cartridges were inside the plane. Okay, I didn't realize that. I figured most of them would be outside.
Yeah.
But, okay, so actually that must have been, if you had a lot of action, that would be a very slippery place to walk, wouldn't it?
Uh-huh.
I mean, to move around. You could fall down, I guess, if you slip on one or whatever. Could you not?
Well, the window was way up high, so it... You
generally wasn't.
Your
it wasn't a problem. Huh?
No.
Okay. Okay, that's very interesting.
But now,
okay,
I tell you one thing that was interesting, and then it wasn't for me too. We had been flying 5 days straight, and we were whipped.
Mm-hmm.
And they were really softening up Germany, and we got hit pretty hard, and on the fifth day, we had several engines that had been hit. So, and we were running out of gas.
Mm-hmm.
So, the pilot landed at the first airfield he saw, which happened to be an English airfield. We stopped there and got some food and some gas, and took off back to the base, hoping that they wouldn't have us up for the next day. Okay. When the pilot peeled off and landed, his buddy peeled off too. He thought something was wrong, so he peeled off and landed too. And then when they started back, one would lead and the other would follow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the lead pilot would get down as close to the ground as he could. The one following didn't have anywhere to go, but he went. And you saw cows and horses and everything running away. And when we got to the base, they already knew about it. The pilot had to go up before the commanding officer.
Well, was he not supposed to fly that low? Is that?
Oh, no.
he was just kind of horsing around or whatever?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So then he was criticized when he got back, huh?
Yeah. But they didn't do anything.
Yeah.
I expect the commanding officer had done.
Yeah.
Some things too.
So you scared a lot of horses and cows, huh?
Yeah. And funny thing, the older ones on the plane was telling the pilot, raise it. The kids on the plane, the young ones, say, lower.
They wanted the excitement of it to get real low. Oh, boy. Okay, so then you got home. Typically, you saw the channel, you got home, you went back to your base at Shippam, was it?
Yeah.
And what happened then? You had a circle, and how about, did they have any priority for any particular planes to go in first? Like with wounded aboard or anything of that nature that you recall? If a plane had wounded aboard, would they send a flare up or anything?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What, do you recall what they did?
Just no, I don't. We didn't have
Never did have wounded aboard. But others did. And then did they shoot a flare or something to indicate that they had a wounded aboard? Then
what they called a meat wagon out there.
Okay, meat wagon, okay.
Yeah.
But you never had any...
No,
never had any wounded aboard.
Our crew never did have one.
Is that right? Well, that's a remarkable record.
Yes, right, it was my, I got frostbit one time, got grounded for 3 days.
Uh-huh. Your electrical heating system didn't work or what? Or did you lose your glove or something?
Something happened to it.
Yeah.
It was up in Osnabrück.
Uh-huh. Okay, so your plane lands. Yeah. And then what happens to you? What do you do?
Well, we just go back to the barracks. Most times go to bed.
Don't they, do they have any kind of debriefing for you?
Oh, yeah.
What did you have to line up and...
Debriefing.
And what kind of questions did they expect from you? What or answers did they expect from you?
Tell them anything unusual that we saw. Yeah.
And if you saw, like your prior training experience, if you saw a train, you would have to report a train going, or what if you saw a train going from place to place or whatever?
Yeah.
You would report something like that?
Yeah, except we didn't see any.
You didn't see any?
We never saw anything on the ground.
Did you have to report, for example, where you got heavy gunfire or something of that nature, or was that pretty well everybody know where all the guns are already?
Pretty well, no.
What other kind of stuff would you have to report? You know, seeing any
most
planes
of the time,
going down?
What we would see in the distance.
Uh-huh.
We would see the jets, the German jets. You know, they had the first jets.
Yeah, that's right. They sure did.
And they
saw some of those?
I saw a few of them, but they didn't.
Did they attack your squadron or your bomb group?
I never did see them close up.
Uh-huh.
I saw them way out in the distance, just couldn't see them. But they were powerful things.
Yeah. Okay, so your debriefing, how long would that last, Jesse? What would that
be?
45 minutes or so? Or?
Not more than 45 minutes.
And did they give you anything to eat or to drink or anything at all?
They had one bottle of the whiskey or something.
Uh-huh.
And they'd all try to sit beside me, so they get my part. But that's one thing. Our crew never did get drunk when we were flying.
Uh-huh. Let's hope not.
Some of the crews, they would get drunk. That's bad. That was bad.
Oh, that is bad. You don't live to tell the story there, do you? Sometimes.
They would... You just couldn't. You should not be flying when you're drunk.
You should say that. Okay, after your briefing then, you went back to your barracks, huh?
Yeah.
And tried to relax or whatever?
Yeah.
Typically, what did you do? Go to bed or sleep?
Most of the time. Well, sometimes they'd play solitaire for a while.
But, of course, when you got back, usually it was, what, mid-afternoon or?
Yeah.
Probably. And then did you have a good meal that night usually after?
Yeah, okay. It was a pretty good meal.
Did they usually feed you pretty well at this particular base?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But the day you finished your missions.
Say again?
The day you finished your mission, you got put back in another group. Boy, the meals were not so hot.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
In other words, if you didn't have a mission that day, you didn't have...
I mean, no, after you finished, after I got my 35,
uh-huh.
or 30.
Oh, okay.
And I went in the training department, then I had to go back with the permanent party.
Okay.
And eat Spam and whatever else.
Oh, yeah. So you didn't get nearly the quality of food that you had where you were flying, huh? That's, I guess, the way it should be, I suppose.
Yeah.
You guys are... out there on the line. Do you have a particular mission, Jesse, of these? I'm looking here at a list of Jesse's missions that he flew on from March 21st through June 20th. Do you have a particular one that you'd like to talk about in there, or maybe one or two, I don't know, that kind of is strong in your memory?
Well,
is there any particular
one? April the 29th to Berlin.
April the 29th to Berlin, okay.
That was a fairly long one.
8 hours?
We had to circle around and come in from the south.
Into the Berlin from the south?
Yeah.
Was that a change? Was that a change in your plans, or was that the way you were supposed to do it?
No, that just, the guns were heavy.
Oh, on the other direction, huh?
Uh-huh. That was a rough one.
When you say rough, what made it rough?
They had, I believe it said 844 guns that could reach us.
Around Berlin?
Yeah. We missed the target. We came back and they looked at it and said, this is not the target. We said, that's all right, that's the target too that you hit.
You didn't get a prime target, but you got another target.
So that was a rough one. Now there's one up here.
Was that primarily rough because of the guns around Berlin? Right. Or were there other aircraft that?
They were protecting Berlin all they could.
Uh-huh.
Let's see, there was one.
Okay, what about the Politz, Germany.
Yeah, it was right on the coast.
Uh-huh.
On the sea up near Denmark.
Okay.
The Russians had asked that we bomb that. We did, but that was a long one. And we had a lot of guns on us. I mean, there was a lot trained on us there. It was a sea base.
Uh-huh.
Navy base for the Germans,
right?
But we made it all right. That was a rough one.
Was that rough because of the guns trained on your planes or the German aircraft too?
That one.
Or both.
There's something, a little incident happened on that was rather funny. Well, our waist gunner, the ball turret gunner, was scared of it. And he had reason to be.
Was scared of?
The ball turret gunner,
okay.
The one that goes down there.
Yeah, right.
Someone from up above had to always let him down in that.
Right.
Okay. They had to bring him back if anything happened.
Right.
He was scared that if anything happened, they would not bring him back.
Right.
Would not have time. Suppose you get hit and knocked out of the plane. Nobody there to bring him up. So he just died in that ball.
He had no other way to escape.
No way you
could get out.
So he was always scared of it. And eventually they took it out. It wasn't very successful. But he never did do much shooting down there. By the time he got down, saw the enemy planes coming. By the time they got him down, they'd already landed. So, but this time he was down there, and we was coming from, I believe this was Poletz, and he saw a plane down about 5 o'clock, and he called the pilot and told him. The pilot told him, fire ahead. So he started firing up. It was one of our planes that was crippled down there.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
But there's two reasons he didn't hit it. It was too far off, he couldn't have reached it.
Right.
And the other reason, he couldn't have hit it if it had been under his gun.
No, he was not a good shot. it was a good thing he didn't.
But that was funny.
Yeah. It'd been tragic if he'd hit it though, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It would have been bad.
Of course, a lot of that happened.
Yeah, I'm sure it did.
Yeah, both ways. The ground forces hitting the aft planes and the aft planes hitting the ground forces.
Yeah, oh yeah, I'm sure. In wars, a lot of things you don't expect to happen.
Yeah.
Okay, Jess, let's continue on here a little bit. And
this is an editor's note. End of tape A, side 2. The interview continues on tape B, side 1.
Okay, Jess, let's talk a little bit more here about your overall experience. And I got some questions that kind of general, mm-hmm. just general questions to ask. From your standpoint as a person who is a gunner on an aircraft, did you ever have any problem getting what you needed to do your job?
No.
Was everything well supplied and you had no shortage of anything that you knew about?
No, I didn't.
You were in...
When I was there, the emphasis was on the 8th Air Force. Give them what they want, and that's what they did.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about your leadership. Say your pilot, for example, was he a person who was a civilian in uniform, or had he been a career military officer, or what was he like?
No, I think he, I don't know, but I think he was drafted.
Oh, he was drafted too?
Yeah, I think so.
Uh-huh.
And then he went to flight school.
Uh-huh.
After he finished, he stayed in the reserve.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went with American Airlines.
Oh, I see.
And okay. He was with American Airlines for a while.
Just not talking about anybody in particular, but just generally, what do you think about the leadership that you were exposed to when you were in the service? The people that were giving you your orders, did you feel confidence in them? Did you feel comfortable with your leadership and so forth that you had?
Yeah. I was especially General Johnson.
Uh-huh.
I thought he was just about top. And Colonel Gibson.
Uh-huh.
I thought they were good. Now, they were all more immediate, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
And Eisenhower, I thought Eisenhower, I've always had a lot of confidence in Eisenhower.
Mm-hmm.
I had lots of confidence in the men of the 8th Air Force. I thought they did, it was terrible, but I thought they did a good job.
The challenges they had were just almost beyond belief, weren't they really?
Yeah.
Of doing what they had to do.
Yeah.
With the men and material and so forth they had to deal with. Okay, did you notice any difference between any academy graduates versus people who were civilians that went into the officer ranks and so forth? Did you have any exposure to, academy officers that you know of, or most of them, like your pilot, for example, that were drafted and went into flight school and this kind of thing?
Our co-pilot was an old Army officer. I don't know whether he went through. I don't believe he went through
West Point.
No. But I thought he was least confident.
Oh, really?
I thought the pilot, the navigator, and the engineer, and my partner, Wayskin, I thought they were real comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
The others, I think they were good, but they didn't quite reach the
level of the others, huh?
The others. They were good, though.
Mm-hmm. How was the discipline in your group that you were associated with? Did you have good discipline? Did people follow orders well and do what they were supposed to do?
And they did, yeah. But now you didn't have the discipline like you do. You would have had in the Navy. I mean, in the infantry,
mm-hmm.
you know, or all of that. And they were. A lot of more good guys.
Did you have any people, many people that kind of broke the rules?
No.
Did you have any trouble with any, you know, was gambling a problem or drinking or any of that kind of thing?
Drinking?
Yeah.
No. When they went on leave to London.
Mm-hmm. Watch out. Watch out.
London, gambling, wasn't... there's plenty of gambling in there.
Yeah. Was it kind of course it wasn't condoned by anybody, the gambling part. Do they have kind of little secret games here and there that kind of only a few people knew about or what?
No, I don't think. I think they're wide open.
Wide open, huh? Okay, was there any discrimination that you saw of any kind in your group? You said you had one person that might have been discriminated against, but was not because he was well protected by your crew.
Yeah. He was a Jew.
Yeah, right.
Oh, he was a swell guy. Oh, we all thought the world of him.
Uh-huh.
And,
kind of protected him.
I didn't see any discrimination.
Tell me about your spare time. Did you ever have a chance to go to London, Jesse? When you
I went once.
Uh-huh. Was that as part of a larger group, or did you kind of go by yourself? Or
the whole crew went down there.
Whole crew went.
I think... Slept the USO down in a hole down at some point.
In a bomb shelter or something?
Bomb shelter, I think.
Uh-huh. Was there much German activity at this time, bombing at all?
No, it wasn't at the time, I was there.
Yeah, that was kind of past, I guess.
But I didn't see much of London.
Mm-hmm. How about the health of your group that you were in? Were you all pretty healthy people?
Yeah.
And were you able to stay healthy?
Yeah.
Did you have good medical care?
Yeah.
Anybody, how about when you were frostbitten? What happened to you then? What did they do with you when you were frostbitten? Put you in the hospital or just?
No. The doctors at the base, medical department.
Uh-huh. You didn't have to go in to the hospital or anything.
No.
You just kind of treated it and you stayed in your barracks, I guess, or whatever.
Yeah.
Or just stayed.
I had no problem with health there.
How well informed were you about the progress of the war as it was going on? I know you got pretty interested in it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
As you were making bombing runs, you wanted to know what was going on.
After we got in England, we got newspapers every day,
uh-huh.
and the Stars and Stripes every day.
Uh-huh.
So we were pretty well informed on most of it.
Uh-huh.
Of course, we were not informed on the Pacific too much,
mm-hmm.
but because the British was not interested in that, they were interested in that.
Right.
Which was affecting them.
So the local newspapers in London or whatever were, stressed the European war, which makes sense, I guess.
I've got some right there. See, there's cellophane. I've got.
Oh, good.
Good. That's good.
Yeah, I like to look at those.
Yeah.
What was your opinion of the enemy that you were facing? What did you think about the guys that were out there against you and the gunners on the below?
I think there was young fellas in there that were good fellas that were just led wrong. I think Hitler was he was just a scoundrel, mean person. And he was out to get the world. And
right,
he would have.
Absolutely, he would have. Mm-hmm. What do you think about their ability of the men that you were faced, that you faced? Yeah. What do you think about their ability to wage war? The fighter
they
pilots.
They had some good men. They had some good pilots. They had good pilots. And they were nice guys. And a lot of them have been over the United States and visited people that...
they tried to shoot down a long time ago.
Yeah, right. In some cases, they knew which they shot down.
Is that right?
Yeah. I've got, I take three magazines here, the 44th Bomb Group and the 8th Air Force and the 2nd Air Division, all of them, and I get his letters in there about where people have been over here and visited.
Uh-huh.
I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, it's time to get back together. It's one world, and we need to be friends. As you went out on a bombing run, I'm just trying to search for what your feelings might have been. What did you feel about what you were doing when you were in the air with flak going on around you and enemy pilots trying to shoot you down? You already talked about your not having too much regard for your personal safety in the early part, but then later on you got a little more worried. Can you think of any other thoughts that maybe went through your mind as you were doing all that, Jesse?
No.
I know it's a long time ago, but...
We were so busy watching the sky.
Yeah.
That we were not paying. And we were watching for those planes coming in. Yeah.
You didn't have so much time to think about anything else?
No.
You just had to do your job?
No.
Just had to do your job. What was your, the morale of your unit, would you say, your squadron or maybe your crew and so forth?
Crew, good. Good.
Good, very, positive guys and...
We still get together.
Do you?
Yeah. I had a letter from the pilot just recently. He wanted me to fill out some information for something there.
Uh-huh.
I filled it out.
So do you ever have a gathering of your group?
Oh, we've been to about four or five reunions. We've gotten to the point we
can't travel too much.
Can't do much traveling now.
Yeah. But you've been to several reunions, though.
I went to Rapid City, South Dakota, Colorado Springs, Norfolk. And one time we just rented a house down Nag's Head. And
is that right?
We went together.
No kidding.
Yeah.
That's great. How about enemy propaganda? Did you hear much propaganda from the enemy?
Yeah.
What did you hear?
Music, mostly.
Mostly. Were you talking about Axis Sally and so forth? Or?
Yeah. We didn't pay attention to anything else, just the music.
Uh-huh. Did she have good information about what you were doing, would you say? I mean, did they talk about...
I don't think so. I didn't pay attention.
Didn't pay attention.
I just... All I wanted to listen was the music.
Uh-huh. She had good music, huh?
Yeah.
Well, she played America.
You played American music.
Yeah. How did you hear it? Did you have a radio in your cruise quarters or what?
Yeah. There again, the tail guns carried a radio over. Wasn't supposed to, but it did.
Carried a radio on the flights?
Oh, I mean from the United States over there.
Oh, he did. Okay. So he had a radio. Okay. And now when you were in the air, you didn't hear anything other than what communication between the pilot and co-pilot and so forth? You never had occasion to, on the way back, tune into anything, did you?
No.
Okay. Okay, how about mail? Did you send mail back and forth to your family?
Yeah.
And did you send V-mail, or what kind of, was it V-mail?
Send V-mail and other...
And regular mail?
Regular mail when I could.
Okay.
When I had time, right.
Did that affect the morale, any of the group, you know, whether you got mail or not and this kind of thing? Was the morale of your group affected by
that? I think so.
If somebody didn't get a letter for a long time or whatever, they kind of get down in the dumps.
Well, once on a crew, got mail. If someone that didn't, it must have been a ball turret gunner.
Oh,
I don't know whether he got mail or not. He was little to himself.
I see. So he was not kind of the. Was he not a very friendly person, or just?
Oh, he was a friendly person, but.
Kind of had a little wall around him, huh?
Yeah.
Well, being down there in that belly turret, maybe that had something to do with it, huh?
Yeah.
That would affect you psychologically. Did you have occasion to interact with any of the British while you were over there?
Very little. Sometimes I would get on my bicycle and ride. I stopped one time at a little school. And of course the kids rushed out to see me, talk to me. And I visited that home several times. They were very nice.
Did they invite you over to have dinner with them or this kind of thing?
Yeah, they were very nice.
Had you ever been in touch with them afterwards?
I think I wrote them after I got back, but I never did hear anything.
Now, you got several decorations for your service over there. Do you recollect what they were? Jesse, I think you wrote them down.
The DFC.
Distinguished Flying Cross, right?
And Air Medal.
Air Medal.
Three or four clusters, I forgot how much.
Yeah.
And, what's a good conduct? That's what this is right here. DFC and the Air Medal.
I see.
The general would always give me the DLC.
Was there a particular mission that resulted in your getting the DFC?
No.
Or was this after 35 missions? Or
no.
Was that your deal, 35 missions?
30
missions.
Was 30.
Okay. Tell me about D-Day. We didn't talk about that much, but what was D-Day like?
D-Day was
just describe that. What was your whole day like on D-Day?
Well, we got up at 10 o'clock at night, and we had letters from General Eisenhower, and at our briefing they said, "This is it," and everybody shouted.
That's June the 5th, I take it, 10 o'clock at night before the invasion on the 6th, right?
And then we, after the briefing, they told us that we would do four missions that day. Our crew, along with another one, would fly the first, and then another two would fly the second, and then we would fly the second, third, and fourth, and then would come back with us, fifth and sixth, anyway.
So you flew four missions that day?
No, I just flew two.
Two missions, okay.
Yeah. And we flew over, we had people volunteering to fly. They wanted to fly to see what was going on. But of course they couldn't all go. We had a cameraman with us. But we couldn't see anything, it was cloudy. You had to fly over Normandy and then go so far and then turn east. It would be east, wouldn't it? Turn east and go so far and then come back. If you turned around, you would be shot at by our own planes, our own crew. Because everything had to go one way and then back around.
And get out of the way when you came back so that they wouldn't mistake you for a German aircraft.
It was terrible. We thought we would have it rough, but we had it. Both of them were easy for us. The Germans were not bothering with us. They had more than they could handle down on the ground. So they were.
Do you recall what your target was, Jesse, on D-Day?
There was two little.
See, it's right here, I guess.
June 6th, there you go. Yeah. Colville and Verrey.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Colville, that's not very far from Normandy beachhead there.
Was that a successful mission that day? You dropped your bombs, I see.
Did you know what?
Was that a successful mission?
Yeah. Drop bombs, 13 minutes.
13.
What is it, 13?
Before.
Oh, 13 minutes before?
Before they're supposed to invade.
Oh, really? You dropped. Oh, I see. Yeah, I see. It was on. Looking at this thing here, it's at 6:15.
Yeah.
They had 240-pound fragmentation bombs to be dropped on Colville in connection with the invasion target. And, of course, you had no cover. Flak, none. And you dropped bombs 13 minutes before the invasion. Is that the idea?
Mm-hmm.
That's very... 13 minutes before the invasion, you were dropping bombs in Colville.
Yeah. So they were easy for us. See, there's no there's no flak at all for us.
Mm-hmm.
And we had excellent cover. See, we had all the cover we wanted.
All the fighter aircraft were up in the air at the same time then with you, is that what you're saying?
No, there was all over the place.
They were, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the fighter aircraft.
There were a lot of them. I don't remember, but I think there's a lot of them that were doing dive bombing.
Uh-huh.
Those P-47s were great dive bombing.
Uh-huh. So when you went over Colville and dropped your bombs 13 minutes before the actual first wave of the invasion, right?
Right.
Tell me again what you had to do to make sure you wouldn't get shot down. You dropped the bombs at Colville.
And then keeps going straight for a length of time. I don't know what it was.
Uh-huh.
And then turn east. Make a 90-degree turn east. Out in what sea is it?
Well, anyway. Channel, I guess.
And then you turn north.
Uh-huh.
And come back into the base.
Okay.
By that time, the second group is already out.
Okay.
And then we get something to eat and get in and thaw it out the second time.
And then the next one was at, I'm looking at the time here.
It was 5:50 at night. In the late in the afternoon.
Oh, late in the afternoon, 5:50 in the afternoon. Okay, then you had 12 500-pound bombs.
Editor's note. End of tape B, side 1. The interview continues on tape B, side 2.
500-pound bombs.
Mm-hmm.
And there, what is that?
Communication lines.
Communication lines, that was the target.
Yeah. and second mission of the day. Mm-hmm. Okay.
No flak.
No flak, right.
Okay, so you went out in the early in the morning and then late in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Is that the idea?
Right.
Okay. Now, both of those missions can you described as being relatively easy?
Yeah.
Is that right? Could right. you see much on the second mission?
No.
Or was still overcast?
I couldn't see. And I couldn't have seen if no matter what. Well, there's lots of going on down there, but you just don't see much.
Right.
At 20,000 feet and watching the sky too.
Right, yeah. You're watching for enemy planes. Now, as a practical matter, were there any enemy planes flying that day particularly?
I don't know. I don't think so. They were there around somewhere.
But they had very little fuel and so forth, so they didn't.
But, I don't know why they were. I imagine the P-47s are used to dive bombing.
Uh-huh.
They were beautiful planes to dive bombing.
Right. So, on June the 6th, you say everybody volunteered. Why don't you go aboard that flight? And did you have any stowaways, people who wanted to get aboard that weren't part of the crew?
I don't doubt what some did.
Not on your plane, though?
No. Not on ours, no.
Okay. Generally speaking, then, everybody was pretty excited about that day.
It took 5 days before I flew again.
And then your next flight was on June the 11th. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and 6,000 pound bombs over Montfort, France, and to knock out a bridge.
Yeah.
And that was cloudy.
Yeah.
Black, nil, cloudy day. Do you know if you knocked your bridge out, or do you have any idea on that, if that mission was successful? Was that, that mission was successful?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. So, Jesse, of course, the war continued on. You had a couple more missions there before you made your 30 missions. I see June 20th there. I see you had, what is it?
Robot.
Robot?
Yeah. They had them all along the coast there.
What is that? What is that? Do you know?
It has buzz bombs.
Oh, okay. You were bombing a buzz bomb installation.
Yeah.
What is that? Do you know?
It has buzz bombs.
Oh, okay. You were bombing a buzz bomb installation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I see here it says did not drop bombs. You had to come back or?
Yeah.
Had to come back. Okay. And Jesse spent here, according to this, 219 hours in the air.
Right.
In a B-24. Almost 220 hours.
That's combat time. So,
yes.
About the same amount.
Oh. 10 days nonstop.
Training.
A long time. Any other comments you have, Jesse? Anything that you remember about the various raids you went on that you can think of that you want to talk about?
No. After I finished my mission, I didn't want to come back to the States and train and go to the Pacific.
Uh-huh.
So I volunteered to stay over there, and I stayed in the training department. A very easy job. I had some typing to do and some answering telephone.
Was this the same airbase?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I stayed there for several months and saw an order coming through for so many instructors mm-hmm. in the States. So I volunteered for it and got it.
And so you came back to the U.S.?
Come back to the United States and went to Loretta, Texas.
Loretta, Texas, okay.
Yeah. And that there were more instructors there than there was gunners.
Students, huh? Or guns.
Students, yeah. So something had to give. So they saw evidently that I had worked in an office. So they sent me to, by way of Harlingen, Texas, up to Greenville, Mississippi. And I stayed in the office there until I was
released.
Retired. Or
okay.
Until I got my discharge.
Uh-huh. How did you learn about VE Day? You were you at that location in the office there? Do you recall?
No, I was on my way to Fort Bragg, from there to Fort Bragg.
Oh.
I had enough points to get out.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
So. Even before VE Day?
You're right.
Is that right?
Yeah. So I was going up to Fort Bragg to get discharged.
Oh, okay. Oh, was this before, this was after VE Day or before VE Day?
Well, I was on the road, I think, during VE Day.
VE Day, Victory in Europe.
Yeah.
Okay.
I believe.
And you had, you were on the road on VE Day and you heard it, what, over the radio or something, or?
Yeah, I don't remember.
Don't recall how you heard it, okay.
Yeah.
And then you're on the way to Fort Bragg, huh?
Yeah, discharge.
And when did you hear about VJ Day, Victory Over Japan? Don't remember. Just remember you knew it. Okay. What do you think about the movies that you've seen about wartime experiences and so forth? Do you have any feel for them, some that you thought were very good, or just in general how you felt about what you've seen?
Tell you the truth, I haven't seen a one of them.
Is that right?
I don't watch television.
You don't watch television or go to the movies, huh? Do you have any other unusual incidents that you might recall, Jesse, either sad, humorous, whatever, that you can remember?
No, nothing especially unusual.
Okay. Did you have occasion to meet, I know you've met some well-known people there, those two generals that were pinning ribbons on your chest. Did you have occasion to meet anybody else that was... most people would know. Were you ever entertained by any of the USO people, Bob Hope or anybody?
No. No. They came to my base there, but most of them came before I
was there. Okay. Did the USO or Red Cross ever do anything for you that you recollect? Did they provide anything?
They provided, They did do a bad job.
Do you remember anything that might have, did you go to a USO gathering of some kind, or what do you recall how they might have helped you?
No, I didn't go to too many of those
kinds of things.
I spent more of my time writing letters.
Okay. Okay. And see, were you married then, Jesse, when you were in service? You weren't married then, were you?
No.
Okay. Can you kind of characterize your service, what you think about what you did back then? What would you, how do you feel about what your part was in winning that war? You were one of a lot of people, but nevertheless, you were one of them.
I think our crew was a good crew, and I think we did a good job. I mean, our crew did what we were supposed to do.
Right.
And we did it, I think, in a manner that was good for the service and good for the country.
Okay. Do you have any particular one event that's the most memorable in your experience that you've had? Is there any particular thing that stands out above anything else that you can think of?
No. I just, I'm thankful that I had the crew that I did. That there was a good bunch of men.
Mm-hmm.
Worked good.
Very close knit, like a family,
yeah,
huh?
You're right.
How did World War II change your life and your outlook on life? I assume it probably had some effect on it.
I don't know if it did, especially because I came right back to the same office, the same desk, the same people. I had the same people, and now.
Did it make you look at life a little differently at all, would you say?
I don't know if it did. My looking at life will probably be more. I got married.
Uh-huh.
Just a year after I got out of service.
Uh-huh.
We got married. That probably changed my outlook more than anything.
Yeah, I'm sure it would, right? I'm sure it would. Okay. And Jesse, why don't you just talk about, just briefly, about some of the things that you've done since you got out of the service. You worked for Marshall Field, and what are some of the other things that you've been doing throughout your life? You've been volunteering at the Y, I know that, and what are some of the things that make you happiest about what you've done since you...
Well, I joined the Bethlehem Methodist Church in 1927, August 1927.
Is that right? 27, wow. Okay.
I've been a member ever since, and I have been on just about all boards, chairman of all boards of the church.
Uh-huh.
Now I'm kind of taking it easy. I married Frances Sutcliffe on August 11th, 1945. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And she taught 8th grade science in schools here, 2 years at Kannapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And she died February 25th, 1999.
Mm-hmm.
I joined the YMCA in 1951, and I've been active in that most of the years. I'm slacking off now, though.
But for the Wise Men's Club and so forth?
Well,
and the
YMCA.
The YMCA itself.
Yeah, I was on... been on the board quite a few years, and I was president, I believe it was 1969.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the old days, back in the old Consolidated Y.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a member of the Wise Men's Club since 1951, and I've served as regional director and other jobs.
Mm-hmm.
In the Wiseman's Club, I've served just about all of the jobs.
Right.
The Wiseman Club is a good club.
Sure is.
It's a very good club.
Yep.
We are letting it getting a little too old, though.
That's like
we
a lot of.
We need to get some younger ones.
That's like a lot of clubs today, Jesse, yeah. I think. Okay, well, listen, I've really enjoyed being with you, Jess, today and getting to hear your story. And I really appreciate you taking your time. Anything else you want to add before we conclude this? Do you think we covered everything okay?
I think so.
Okay.
Oh, I've enjoyed it.
Okay.
I didn't know what to expect.
Well, I know you didn't, but you did a good job on your interview. Okay. Yeah. Well, anyway, that concludes our interview with Jesse Burton today. And enjoyed being with you, Jess.
Yeah.